Hi, and welcome to the Intuitive Insights podcast series. I'm Nina Lockwood, the founder and chief exec of Intuitive Talent Solutions. We work with leading transport organisations in the UK and bring them together with a diverse and talented candidate network for interim and permanent roles. The people who know me know that I like to immerse myself in good conversation. And over the course of the podcast series, I will be joined by some exceptionally talented leaders from the UK transport sector to talk about their careers, the industry, leadership, challenges and opportunities, and much more besides. I do hope that you'll join me and that you'll be inspired by my fabulous guests and their intuitive insights. Today, I'm joined by Anne-Marie Purcell, Chief Transformation Officer for Transport for Greater Manchester. Anne-Marie shares her career story, her attitude to risk, and her three wishes for what she'd like to see done differently in the transport industry as we move forward into the future. I do hope you enjoy this episode. My face was hurting at the end from smiling. I hope yours is too. Thanks for joining us. Anne-Marie Purcell, Chief Transformation Officer for Transport for Greater Manchester. That's a very long name badge, is that? If we were to stick that, that would go right across your chest. That's a long job title and a long name of organisation, but affectionately known as TFGM in the Northwest. It is an absolute pleasure to welcome you onto the Intuitive Insights podcast. I've had the pleasure and the privilege of hearing you speak at the launch of Women in Bus and Coach, and I loved every minute of your energy and your gumption. So I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Thank you so much for agreeing to join me.
That's great. Thanks, Nina, for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So we're going to start off in time-honoured fashion for the Intuitive Insights podcast and ask you to share your career story. So I know that you're not a lifelong transport professional. I know this is fairly recent that you've come to join us in this amazing industry. So take us right back to the beginning. I'm really interested to know why you've made the choices you've made, the career path that you've taken, and how did you get to be the Chief Transformation Officer at TFGM?
I'm hoping it's a bit of an interesting answer. I mean, if I'm honest, I started off with a fashion degree. Not many people know that. And unfortunately, because, you know, my parents, I come from an economically deprived background. My dad was made disabled when he had five kids. Unfortunately, couldn't work anymore. So I really struggled to pay for that degree. The fashion industry is really tough and the degree was really expensive. You can imagine materials. So unfortunately, I couldn't afford it. Even before tuition fees, I couldn't afford it. And so I left, unfortunately. I don't like the word dropped out, but I left because it just wasn't something I could sustain. So I ended up, weirdly, in the nightlife industry, student, you know, and I ended up running a nightclub in Liverpool, of all. But see, you didn't know
really?
That about me.
I did not know that.
So when I was 21, I ran a bar and a nightclub and we had cream DJs and the whole works. It was a student bar. And we used to do, for those gentlemen on this podcast who are interested, we used to do 10p a pint nights when you could afford to do 10p a pint night. I started off and then eventually I couldn't, you know, my mum couldn't cope with my hours I was coming in and all the stress of running a nightclub. And so I actually got ultimately ended up in revenue and customs after a couple of false starts. And I actually, I was in VAT. I was actually in customs, not revenue. I was in customs and excise before the merger. Right. And I worked in VAT and in the large payers unit, they called it, the people who pay a lot of VAT, the big companies.
Right.
And I used to be involved in making sure they paid on time. So I was, you know, went from a nightclub to making people pay VAT on time.
Right. That is a contrast. That is some contrast, to be fair.
And interest, and in a short way, I ended up through some various different promotions working on projects, and it was on putting EVAT in. So for those of you who can do VAT, you now do it on VVAT, and I ended up in a really minor role. And when revenue and customs merged, there wasn't really anywhere to get promoted or kind of get improvement. There was a lot of surplus staff, and really had this passion for change, you know, delivering projects. And when you work in kind of that type of industry, in kind of that sector, the way to get promoted is you go around different parts of the organisation. You don't necessarily stick to a career in a particular, like HR, for example. you move around.
Yeah.
And I actually really liked projects and delivering projects and being involved in projects. So someone recommended maybe looking outside and maybe going contracting. And I had this lovely permanent job in revenue customs. And people thought, "You're mad! You're absolutely mad!" And people were saying it to me, but I had children and my salary wasn't covering, you know, even the nursery. So I thought, if I'm going to take a risk in my life, right, and I don't get a job and I end up out of work, well, I'm not earning anything anyway by the time I paid for two kids to go to nursery. So I actually thought, right, I'm going to do this. And I got offered a job in Liverpool working in a PMO, which is, for those of you who don't know, it's like a project management office that helps with the administration of projects. And I went contracting, self-employed, got myself a company and thought, right, okay. And if I don't have a job in 6 months, well, then I'll just go back to being a mum until I get another job.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. And really interestingly, when people asked me where I was going when I was leaving Revenue Customs, actually the people who'd been there for a long time said, good on you. You know, it's amazing how, you know, the people who've been there a long time, who like jobs for life type of civil servant people, actually said, not the same anymore. We're leaving soon. Off, you know, it's a good idea. So then I kind of built my way up. And for those of you who've ever contracted, you'll know that generally you don't get promoted because why would you? You're not an employee. But actually, I've been really, really lucky and I've worked really hard. And I was self-employed for 12 years and I worked in a variety of different sectors. And I don't know, hard work, getting on well with people, or maybe acting a bit more permanent, being part of the fabric of the organisation, made people give me bigger pieces of work and bigger opportunities. And over them 12 years, I systematically went from just an analyst to running massive big programmes in Unilever, in nuclear, in water industry, financial services. So I've, across them 12 years, I've stayed with change. I've stayed with delivering change and delivering transformation, whether that be major IT transformation, largely not technical, but or doing target operating models for industries. And that's what I've done, really. And that's why I've ended up. And my last job was I was employed at Unilever, delivering change for them across the globe. I had a team in Bangalore and Brazil. Right. And worked right the way through the pandemic, watching that go around the world. And then until this role came up on the market, delivering the B network. And what a legacy to leave if you can get, you know, deliver this on yellow buses on the network.
So when you, I don't know whether you were approached by this, about this role by a headhunter, whether you saw it advertised, what was it when you kind of like, all right, okay, buses in Manchester, yellow buses, and they are cute buses, but buses in Manchester? Buses. So what was it? What was the appeal? What was the attraction that you made you want to go for it?
Right. So for those of you who watch Friends, my job is like Chandler Bing. Nobody knows what I do. So when people, when my mum introduces me, she says, oh, this is my daughter. I don't know what she does. So because no one actually knows what my kids don't know what I do. Nobody knows what I do. So because what I largely do is transformational change within an organization. And you don't often see that from within an organization. So unless you work in in my sector, generally, what does a project manager do versus a program manager? But actually, when this role, I wasn't actually looking. I was sat in Unilever, having a really good time. I loved Unilever, brilliant company to work for. And there was part of me which was missing local touch, if I'm honest.
Right. Okay.
Having worked in the pandemic, locked in my house, having a team in Bangalore and Brazil, missing that local connection. And some of it was that, and some of it was just, I'm going to hopefully deliver something that A, is doing something for the local area that I live. I mean, I'm from Liverpool, but, you know, Manchester's not miles away, for the northern economy. I also knew transport is massively different than the south, so it would be brilliant to invest, to use that investment and to do it properly. And then mainly, if I'm totally honest, selfishly, it meant that actually for the next 10, hopefully 20 years, I'll be able to say, well, that's what I do. That's what I do to people who don't know what we do. And a lot of the people who've come to work with me subsequently have said, one of the things we wanted to do is we wanted to leave. We wanted to be able to say in years to come, actually, you know what? What a massive career, what a massive kind of thing for a career to say, actually, look what we achieved, and physically see it in years to come for the people of Greater Manchester using it, and hopefully other areas to do the same. And I think that's what appealed to me, was something local and something that actually I could look out for years and go, yeah, I've done loads of amazing transformations, but actually look at, I can physically see it. Even when I'm retired, you know, I can say to my grandkids, look what your nan did. You know?
Yeah. So
part of that job satisfaction, really, to be honest.
And that kind of very much leaving a legacy, because there are so many jobs that we do, aren't there, that throughout your career, and it's kind of like, well, what was the point of that? So, you know, we might have increased revenue, we might have reduced costs, we might have been, you know, brought some efficiencies in, and that all of those are important because it's what keeps business moving. But to be able to kind of go out of your office in Manchester,
or look out the window
and see them and see the yellow buses beetling around, then, or buzzing around, we should say, not beetling, then that, being part of that, is something significant, isn't it? I absolutely get that. The
It's really special.
Yeah, one of the other things that you said to me, and it's really, it always interests me when I have these conversations, because there are quite a number of guests on this podcast who will say, I was really lucky, was really fortunate. And I always bring them back to say, right, hang on a minute. But yes, there's a degree of luck, isn't there, in everything that we do. And we can be in the right place at the right time. But I'm a firm believer in, you might be in the right, loads of people are in the right place at the right time, but they don't recognise that they are. Or even if they recognise they are, they won't then take the risk to grab hold of the opportunity. And it's clear from what you've told us so far that you are open to taking a risk, you know, a calculated risk. And if it doesn't work, then I'll go and get another job somewhere else. And that's fine. And you've given us a couple of clues in terms of that being really lucky, because you work hard and you get on with people.
Yeah.
So would you say, when you look back and you kind of, like you talked about the work that you were doing at Customs and Excise, where you were getting various different promotions, why were you getting various different promotions? Why were they promoting you? What is it about you?
I think, I suppose one of the things is, in the early stages of my career, some kids think, and I look at my son and my own daughter, and I'm like, oh, I don't know what I want to do. And it almost stagnates them a little bit. It kind of, you know, puts concrete around the legs. And I keep saying to my kids, it's not about knowing what you want to do now. It's about moving forwards. And as long as you're moving forwards, you'll find your way. Just keep your legs moving and you'll be okay. The minute you stop and stagnate because you don't know what you want to be in 10 years' time, what do you want to be when you grow up? Well, I still don't know. So just keep moving forward. And I suppose one of the things I was open to at that time was I wanted to do more and do better for myself. I wasn't necessarily thinking, well, is the next role my role till I'm 65? That's never what I was trying to achieve. I was always just looking at the next step. I mean, I had young children, so some of it was to relate to that, and just having roles that made my life better for them. And I never focused on, and you know, I know a lot of people talk about, where do you want to be in 5 years' time? But when you're 19, 20, 21, that's a long way off now. But when you're young, that's a long way off. Like, what do you mean in 5 years' time? You know, do you think you're dead old in 5 years' time? So I think one of the things that opened me up, I wasn't necessarily always looking for the perfect role. Nothing's perfect. No, nothing ever is. And I've never, ever had that. I've never focused on that in my life. If something's 80%, well, you've done well. So I've never looked at, even when I was self-employed, is it the exact rate in the exact location? No, I've always flexed to, well, do I fancy that role? Do I fancy that for a bit? Do I think I can add value? Do I think I'm going to get something from it? You know, if it's a bit of money either way, or it's not quite exactly what, or in the perfect location, no. And I think that's partly why I got promoted, because I was just open to trying different things and trying different roles and not thinking, well, that's it for life. You know, that, well, if I take that job, that means I'm doing that job for the rest of my life. And I think that's partly what I encourage in my kids, is to stop focusing on what you're going to be doing when you're 65. Start focusing on what you're doing next year. And that'll get you
exactly there, you know? That is really brilliant advice, because there are people, and I do know a couple of people who have had a career plan, I've never had a plan. There was never a plan. And I spent a long time kind of trying to work out what is it? What do I want to do? But in the meantime, you're learning about what you're enjoying doing. And if you kind of, I guess, focus on what do I really like? Where am I adding the value? What am I good at? And generally the stuff you like is the stuff that you're good at, because that's why you're good at it. And then you kind of make a role for yourself, because you focus in, don't you, on what works and what makes you feel good.
I mean, I'm very jealous of my husband. My husband got a Saturday job of 15 and a hairdresser to pay for a holiday. And he's amazing. And he got trained by a college and he loves his job. Wow. I mean, he loves it. I mean, really loves it. He's quite happy to get back off holiday and go back into the salon.
Right.
But you know what? He reminds my kids, he is few and far between. Most people have to find what they love and find a way through it and don't necessarily get a career out of it straight away. He was very lucky. He just landed on something that he loved, and he was lucky. He loved it. He was very good at it. And he's had that career since he was 15. He's never had a job interview. He's just had that career since he was 15. Yeah. But I think we need to remind our youth that no one's got it figured out at 15 or 20. Yeah. And actually, it's okay. Most people don't. And some people are sporty, they're athletes, whatever, great. The vast majority of people who go to school haven't got a clue what they're going to do and won't figure it out until they're 30, probably, if they're lucky.
Exactly. I think that's such an important message. My daughter's going to be 21 next month, and she's doing a year study abroad, and then she'll come back and do a final year at Leeds Uni. So she's kind of adding an extra year in to the degree process. So she's just now starting to think about, well, what do I want to do? And she's getting quite worked up about it, because she hasn't got in her head the complete list of, right, this is what I want to do, this is what I'm going to be, this is where I want to go and work. And I keep saying to her, what you're saying now is just do something, just try something.
Keep going forward.
And when you do that, you'll know what you do like and what you don't like, and then the next thing you do, there'll be more of what you do like, probably some other stuff that says, yeah, I'm actually not keen on that. And you just evolve, don't you? You evolve as a person. And then you kind of, the opportunities start presenting themselves to you, is my experience. But you've got to be, you've got to have your eyes wide open and be ready for it, haven't you?
And be prepared to take a risk. You know, be prepared to accept something that's not 100% what you want. And maybe focus on the organisation a little bit. Do I want to be part of this organisation? Because even if the role's not exactly what you want, there'll be another role. Yeah. And I think some of that is to do with that. Be prepared to take a bit of a risk within your means. Obviously, you can't, you know, and be prepared to take probably a risk less on your finances, but more on what you're prepared to do and not do, and where you're prepared to work. And I think if you're prepared to do that and be open, I think opportunities come to you probably as much as take them. You know, I think they come to you because people see that you're someone willing to do, you know, something a bit different.
Yeah, try absolutely. Yeah, there's some amazing advice in there. I'm going to turn the conversation. I could keep talking to you about your career for ages. I want to ask you loads about your project management stuff and what have you. Well, maybe we need to carry that on in a different conversation, because I'd like to move us on to the second part of the podcast, which is where I get my magic wand out and I say to you, Anne-Marie, I'm going to put you in charge of everything, and you've got the ability to have three wishes, the things that you would change if you were in charge of the transport industry. We can do transport as a whole, it can just be bus, but in relation to what you would do differently, what would your three wishes be?
Okay, so one of the things I think that we focus on quite a bit is assets. You know, it's about the things, it's about, and look, they're really important. But actually, one of the things that I'm working on is what are the services we deliver? And that really gets everyone heated, because that people think that means a bus service or a rail service. What I mean is, what are the services we do as an organisation or organisations that deliver value, whether that be internal value like a payroll service or an outward value like travel disruption to customers? I'm really focusing on what services we deliver, not just the bus on the road or the rail on the track. What services do we deliver? And once you've worked through that, you're then thinking about your internal customers, your external customers, and your stakeholders as well, which we have loads. We have politicians, we have regulators, we have everybody else. And when you look at your services, they are cross-functional. They're not rigid to a function in an organization. They generally run cross-functional. So if you take travel into disruption, for example, it relies on an operator providing the information. It relies on your customer team feeding that through. It relies on your bus team. It relies on multiple different people. It provides relies on your technology team to present it. So it relies cross-functional. And I think it opens up the your organization then to say, well, actually, how do we add value and what is the best way for us to provide that, and rather than our traditional kind of functional ways that we might have always operated.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing that then does is says, what skills and capabilities do we really, really need? And it may not always traditionally be the people who know how a bus physically operates or a rail physically operates. Yeah. They are value, pleased. I mean, they're brilliant. They're absolutely valuable.
Yeah, we need them.
Key. Yeah. Absolutely key. But there is in this industry where, and in this modern age where we're moving towards more digital, more online, more customer channels, more multimodal types of things, and people who want to self-service a lot, people don't think they do.
Yes.
They don't like it at a checkout, because I don't. Yeah. I don't like a self-service checkout. But physically doing stuff online is a massive pull for people. They don't want to stand at a ticket office. Do you know what I mean? Some people do, and we need to provide that service to people who don't have the ability to do it. But I think we need to look up and out. And if once you look at your values and your services, then you can start to look at what skills and capability you need in an organization. And that's one of the things that I would like people to really hone in on. If I was in charge, I'd say, look, don't just look at the bus and the trail and the track. Look at what you're delivering outwardly and inwardly, how you can actually improve your organization to deliver that. Really, it's probably
love
what I would
say. Yeah, love that.
The other one, which you'll know, which I'm a big advocate of, is women. So I'm, you know, because I talked to the Women and Busing Coach.
Yeah.
I think, look, if I come from TFGM and we have a good mix of women and men, but operationally wise, in operator industry, it's less so. And I think, you know, women bring regardless of what skill set we come from or anything else, we bring an absolute different perspective on how we operate within meeting rooms, for example, or out on the network. We have a different approach. And at the end of the day, we make up 50% of the population. So we make up 50% of the traveling public. So therefore, it should appeal to women and it should be represented by women. And whether that's in your organization or outwardly to customers. And I just think we need to encourage more women into the industry. And I think we need to make it welcoming. And, it, you know, in part it is in certain standard roles. But one of the things that will help with the third point that I'd like to make is getting away from this need that every role needs to have come from a transport background. We've discussed this.
Yeah.
You know, I don't come from a transport background. And are the things I could have done better at delivering, you know, last September? Of course, you know, massive monumental change. I don't think that's particularly linked to the fact that I don't have a transport background, because I have plenty of people in this organisation who do and I rely on them. I think for me, it's about if apart from the fact it will open up the door to women more who don't traditionally come from an engineering infrastructure background or training, so it will open it up more for them. I think it just opens it more up to other people and youth. So people who want to get into marketing, people who want to get into brands, and people who want to do all the things. If you tie it all the way back to skills and capabilities and what services we deliver, the whole thing starts to unlock. So you unlock the industry for other people. You unlock the industry for women. You bring new talent and new skills in, but you also retain the talent and skills that you already have that does the traditional roles that we need on the, and who knows, they might find a different, you know, going back to my original point about what do you want to do with the rest of your life? You know, you might have been in a traditional bus driving role for the past 20 years, and actually you see these new people coming along and actually doing something on branding. Well, maybe you might go, actually, never thought about doing branding. I might want to go have a go at that. So the whole thing connects, if you, and that unlocks and maybe we remove some of the barriers, both to people coming into the industry, women coming into the industry, but barriers within your organisation to improving yourself, really, and answering to your customers' needs. I think the whole thing unlocks that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. 100% heated agreement from me on all of those points. I think if I say to my daughter's peer group, so they're in the kind of early 20s, about when they're thinking about career choices, and I say, what about transport? And they're, oh, I don't want to drive a train. Yeah. I don't, you know, I'm not interested in driving a bus. And it's like, well, do you know what? Fair enough, because that wouldn't work for me. Do you know, driving a train and being on my own for all that time, sat there with nobody to talk to, I couldn't do that. But I know plenty of people who absolutely love it, and fair dues. We're all different, aren't we?
Yeah.
So we play to our strengths. But as an industry, as a transport industry as a whole, it's like a massive secret that there's all of these amazing jobs within it. And we have, in terms of marketing and branding, we've seen some fantastic stuff with the launch of the B Network, where we're making it vibrant, we're making it exciting, you know, something that people have wanted to be part of. And, you know, the stuff that Nigel Fethan's done at Go Ahead with the Elite Driver recruitment campaign.
Completely different.
Amazing. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant. And great results, especially from that, encouraging females to apply as well. So I think you're absolutely right with your services. It's kind of, we don't just provide a bus to get you from A to B or a train to get you from A to B. There's all of this other stuff that's going on in the background, which is really interesting and really exciting to be part of.
Yeah, I agree. And we just need to unlock that. And, you know, what Nigel did, I agree with you on the, it opened up a view of bus driving to a different group of individuals. But part of that comes from him using a really good marketing approach, which is needed. You can't. And so all of these skills and capabilities are needed to make a multimodal integrated network for buses and trams and trains and getting people around. It's all integral, but we don't necessarily talk about it. And I would agree with you about kids and industry. I mean, nuclear is very similar. People assume if you work in nuclear, you've got to have a doctorate. Well, I certainly didn't. So, we've got to, it's not just transport who has some of these challenges. We need to unlock. We need to unlock some of these myths and bust some of them. And we can do that by changing ourselves a little bit and being open to that. And part of being open to that is not always assuming you need to have a transport background to come through the door. So we get more of us and we talk and all of that type of stuff.
Brilliant. Final question. I've seen you a few times now. I've seen you in action on the stage. I've been in terms of the Women in Bus and Coach. I made it sound like you were doing a turn at the Opera House then. So I've seen you speaking a few times, and I love your energy. I just think you light up a room with the passion that you've got for what you do and how you're doing it. I think there are probably some days, maybe not that many, but some days when you kind of wake up and it's a bit like, oh. Right, am I looking forward to today? Where do you get your inspiration from? What keeps you going? What gives you that energy that you can keep doing what is actually a really challenging and a really big job that you've got?
So I'll be honest, I had one of them days yesterday, because I managed to escape for 4 nights, and I landed from Marrakesh at 11:30 at night on Monday night, and I had to be in here at 7:30 the next day. Not good. No. But I think, so I am an absolute nightmare for a deadline and for a change, right?
Yeah.
So I don't go to the gym, I should. I'm midlife, I need to get there. But I get my kind of buzz, my adrenaline from a good deadline and a really good outcome. And I think that's what drives, for me getting out and getting the job done and delivering for people. That's where I get my passion from. So, once I get going, I'm a bit sad. It takes me with me. And I'm very, very fortunate. My husband says this a lot about me. I don't carry a lot of stress in my shoulders. So I deal with stress quite well. So I'm quite good at managing my stress levels. I don't know whether I manage them, but I'm just very good at handling stress. Okay. So I see things as a challenge to get through, and I like running through walls. And as much as people like cleaning up after me, I like running through walls. You know, I love that kind of challenge and adrenaline and what have we got to get to today and that type of stuff. And, you know, if you've got a good team behind, I have got a great team outside this door who work really hard and come cleaning up after me sometimes, which is amazing. But also in front of me, running ahead of me, and have thought of things that I've not thought about. And working with them is really good. But just, you know, I think that's where my passion comes from. Change is really, really scary for people.
Yeah.
But actually, it's absolutely fundamental to everybody's part of life. We're always, we're all constantly evolving. You use the word evolve. Individually, we're always evolving. And I think it's scary, but actually it's really exciting. And if you take it on as something that's exciting to change, either yourself or an organisation, it can be really exciting and energising to kind of let go of. I've just had a hammam in Marrakesh. It's like letting go of your old skin, you know, like, and you know what I mean? And
it's
revitalising, you know? So I think that's a little bit about my passion, really, you know, revitalising myself and other people, really.
Brilliant. So, well, I love being in your company. I love hearing you speak. And I just think that the transport industry is really fortunate that you've chosen to come and bring your breed of magic into the bus industry in Manchester. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens next. And I've absolutely loved this conversation. Thank you so much for joining me, for sharing your story, and for giving us your thoughts in terms of what the industry could do differently. And let's see if whoever comes and wins the election later this year will take any notice. That'd be good, wouldn't it?
I'm saying nothing.
No, I think that's the safest thing.
Thanks, Nina.
Anne-Marie, thank you so much. Really appreciate you making the time.
Thank you. Bye.
A massive thanks to Anne-Marie for joining us on this episode of Intuitive Insights. I absolutely love that conversation and the energy that's bouncing out of the screen. So I hope you've enjoyed it too. Please do like and subscribe onto whichever podcast channel you're listening to us on. We really appreciate your support in getting these career stories out into your own network. Thank you so much for joining us. Take care and I'll see you soon.